This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Called the rainforests by the sea, coastal mangroves are among the most threatened ecosystems on Earth. Current estimates indicate that up to 67% of mangroves have been lost to date, and nearly all unprotected mangroves could perish over the next 100 years. It was International Day for the Conservation of the Mangrove Ecosystem on July 26th, and I get a 101 on mangroves and their priceless benefits from Dr. Ahmad Aldri Amir. He's a senior lecturer and research fellow at the Institute for Environment and Development, or Lestari, at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. And Dr. Aldri is also the coordinator of the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network, also known as My Mangrove. Welcome, Dr. Aldri. How are you today?
Hello, Juliet. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Can I know a little bit about you? You know, how did you get interested in mangroves? Tell me a bit about Lestari and My Mangrove.
Oh, thank you. It's a romantic love story, by the way, and it involves a few interesting plots and characters, if you don't mind. I was born in Kuantan, and I grew up in coastal districts, coastal towns of Mersing, of Terengganu, of Kuantan again, and then my parents moved to Sungai Petani near Merbuk Mangroves, and then finally I went to a boarding school in Taiping, which is close to the largest piece of mangrove on Peninsula Malaysia, that is Matang Mangrove. But then it didn't start there. It was during my second year of university, I wrote an essay on mangrove, and I started delving into mangrove ecology, and I was stunned, I was amazed, bedazzled, if you like, on mangrove. So I continued focusing on mangrove forest structure for my honors thesis, and then on mangrove biodiversity and management during my master. At that time, actually, I've decided to pledge my eternal love towards mangroves.
And does your wife know about this?
Yeah, she came later in my life, but yeah, lucky enough, she is very supportive of what I'm doing. So, okay, so I go to fieldworks, I go to meetings on mangroves. She said, okay, all right, cool, all right. But then I have to thank a few people for that. I mean, of course, my parents, they move around, and my father was a government official, so moving around a few districts. Of course, my guru at that time during my first degree and my master, Emeritus Professor Latif, he actually groomed me to become the mangrove man I am today. But ultimately, at the I went to Australia to work with, to do my PhD with Dr. Norman Duke. He is the global reference, global expert, international reference for mangrove and mangrove ecology. And he actually, not to say brainwashed, but actually trained me.
Set you on the right path.
yeah, pretty much. So I see mangrove differently at that point, and I became creative, I focus on mangrove from different aspects and angles. And then there are so many things to explore, a lot of things to be understood, because they are unique in so many senses, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're quite taken for granted, right, mangroves in Malaysia just itself, you know, yeah. We didn't really notice it until the storms happened. But before we get into that, I mean, can we do a 101 on a mangrove forest?
Sure.
What are the characteristics of a mangrove forest?
Okay, cool. First of all, they would only prefer sheltered coastline in the tropic and subtropic zone, within the intertidal zone. Mm-hmm. So they prefer zones are just slightly above mean sea level. So that is one thing, a particular unique thing about mangrove. And secondly, they are halophytes. They are salt-loving creatures, salt-loving plants. So not many plants have this ability to tolerate salt. They are bringing good benefit for us by adapting to salt water. And more interestingly, they have specialized root systems, which is the characteristics of mangrove, because of the site that they are in, with the tidal activities, with soft sediment, anoxic sediment, and aerobic sediment. So they adapt by forming these specialized root systems, which allow them to absorb salt water and then excrete salt from their body.
Wow.
They don't need salt to grow, to live. But they are doing this for us, like defending us by adapting to this ecosystem. And then another thing is their specialized reproductive mechanism. Mm-hmm. Okay, so being at between land and sea, there is a tidal activity going on every day. Especially in Malaysia, we have semi-diurnal situation where we have two high tides and two low tides every day. It happens twice every day. So they need to adapt to this, right? So young plants, I mean, the seed, the baby of mangrove, actually is attached to their parents until they are ready to become a tree. So they are not released as a seed like durians, like other fruits. So they grow to be a young adult, attached to the parents, and when they are ready to be independent, the parents will release them. But then at the same time, they have this ability to float or to be buoyant for a long time. Mm-hmm. Again, because of this tidal activity, so they can float and then take root somewhere suitable. Normally, it's within a few radius from the parent, but they may travel quite a distance.
Okay.
But then another point that was my finding and my supervisor's finding at that time, Norms, this reproductive mechanism actually provide a mechanism for mangrove to regenerate naturally. You will seldom see mangrove grow like a really old and huge. Yeah, because if they grow old and huge, they tend to fall because of the soft sediment.
Sure.
So, this is a mechanism where, of course, catalyzed by some nature disturbances, it allows for mangrove to rejuvenate itself naturally.
Wow.
So the turnover is quite fast, 30 to 70 years. We will get new forests, and that's why if you go on boat, cruising on boat, looking at mangroves, you will find like a similar height and similar size of trees. And then this actually one of my publication, I summarize mangrove as the forever young ecosystem. So these are some of the characteristics of mangrove.
They sound amazingly resilient and like such amazing plants.
They are,
trees,
yes.
And
yes, the unique characteristic actually amazed a lot of scientists, and yeah.
Okay, so the plants is like, who kind of, lives among there? What sort of organisms do we find within mangrove?
Yeah, good question. I mean, like, not just plants are unique. That's why I renewed some of the definition for mangrove habitat or mangrove forest or mangrove ecosystem. Not just plant, but they are also inhabited by unique animals. The most unique, the mudskipper. This is an iconic species for mangrove, I would say. So they are able to live in water and outside water.
Sure.
So and then molars, bivalves, fish. Talking about fish, you see, like mangroves are the sanctuary, breeding habitat, spawning habitat for coral fishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, occasionally you may find dolphins, pink dolphin, dugong grazing on seagrasses just adjacent to mangrove. But then some other mangroves, they have iconic species like in Borneo. In our mangroves in Borneo, we have proboscis monkey. And then in Sundarban mangroves in between Bangladesh and India, that is the largest piece of mangrove, by the way, in the world. They have Royal Bengal tiger making mangrove as their habitat. Living in mangrove. So
interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
So, okay. So, it grows in an intertidal zone. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
So, between water and land. Is that...
In between the highest astronomical tide and the lowest tide.
Okay.
So, this is their preferred place. So, yeah.
So, how are they so... I guess, what makes them so resilient? How do they manage to survive such hostile conditions?
All right. Going back to their morphology and physiology of their bodies and adaptation to this ecosystem. Yeah, this is a point I would relate to their ability to move with the zone.
The
zone's
right.
Okay, now that we were talking about global climate change, increase in sea level. So they have this ability to go with this zone. All right, so they are better at colonizing, any areas, they are suitable. But of course, there are preferred characteristics or sediment that they would prefer. And then, when we talk about sea level rise, they will move together or along with the movement or the increase or decrease of mean sea level. So this is an interesting point that I want to highlight in the management or conservation of mangrove. All right, so they themselves, mangroves, are buffer or protector of this coastline. But at the same time, to conserve mangrove, they themselves need some buffer to allow for this natural process to happen, because they move. They are highly adaptive to their ecosystem, to their surrounding. So when sea level rise, they will move landward. And then if sea level decreases or there are sedimentation process happening seaward, so they are able to actually propagate.
Okay.
So we gain land that way. So yeah, this process needs to be allowed. So what's happening mostly in our country and our region is that we build sea walls or bunds behind mangroves. So there's no way
for them to move.
There you go.
All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Ahmad Aldri Amir. He's a senior lecturer and a research fellow at the Institute for Environment and Development, or Lestari, at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. He's also the coordinator of the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network, My Mangrove. And we're discussing mangroves, you know, getting a 101 on this amazing ecosystem, amazing things that they are. And we'll find out more a bit about the threats facing mangroves, especially here in Malaysia, after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Dr. Ahmad Aldri Amir. He's a senior lecturer and a research fellow at the Institute for Environment and Development, or Lestari, at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. He's also the coordinator of the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network, My Mangrove. And we're discussing, you guessed it, mangroves. It was actually International Day for the Conservation of the Mangrove Ecosystem on July 26th. I mean, this already showing that there's a UN day specific to mangroves. Shows how important it is. But I think, as with everything else, we are losing our mangroves.
Yeah, I mean, it happened not just in Malaysia. It's actually, I would say, it's a regional and global thing.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia and Southeast Asia is a center for distribution of species, of mangrove species. In fact, in ecological studies, the whole world is divided into two. So on our side, it's Indo-West Pacific, or some would call the old world. And then on Atlantic East Pacific, the New World. So we were divided into these two. So ecologically, in the West Pacific, our region in particular is the center for distribution with highest number of species, with the largest area of mangrove.
Okay.
So we are very proud of that. But at the same time, especially since the mid-50s, I mean, many countries within our region gain independence, and then they start building up their economy, population start to shoot. That was the point where mangrove reforestation started rapidly, especially in Malaysia. Like we plan for an economic expansion, economic development for the country. So we pursued on agriculture and aquaculture at that time. So these actually needed land, right? So mm-hmm. yeah, they tend to change mangrove into agriculture. So that was a turning point. And up until now, yeah, quite a vast number of mangrove, but we still do have, actually Malaysia, based on the global database, is ranked third as the third largest mangrove holding nation in the world.
Okay.
Although the number declined, but since I have a graph showing that starting, it was during the tsunami. So there was an increase since 2000 to 2010. And I reckon because 2005, we started preserving and we started replanting as well.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the graph showed in the opposite direction starting 2000. So,
So, I mean, just to go on that point, you know, I think a lot of us only realize the importance of mangroves, you know, when the tsunami hit, and scientists like you came out and said, yeah, because you cut the mangroves, our buffer zone was
exactly,
gone.
Yeah.
Maybe you could explain that for those who don't know.
Because mangrove naturally does this for us, like for ages. Like they are there for a reason, like being a shelter, being a buffer, being a protector, a defender of coastlines. So, and then this was also the reason why some of the most of all actually tropical coastal towns started, because access to water, access to water transportation, resources that they provide, and then the shelter that they provide also. But actually, they sacrifice themselves for us. You see, like, okay, we do have tidal surges. We do have, actually, Malaysia is so lucky that we are out of the Pacific Ring of Fire. Like, we don't have earthquake, we don't have volcano eruption, but we know that it happened before in 2004. It may happen again. Yeah. And unexpected disasters could happen too. So climatic hazards, geological hazards, yeah, it could happen. So a good example would be, it may sound weird to say good, but like Typhoon Haiyan in Philippines, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they did have mangrove before that in the Philippines, but of course it was deforested and a lot of mangrove forest loss. So when Haiyan hit Philippines and other countries within that area, not just the human towns and cities vanished, including the mangrove, to show how extreme the impact was in that particular situation. Post disaster, then we may need to assist their regeneration. All right, so say they sacrifice, but then they need help as well because they are fragile.
Yeah,
and although they look like really scary, really strong, really macho, but they are actually very fragile too. Yeah.
Okay. So, and another point I forgot to bring up is how they are actually very efficient in terms of sequestering carbon dioxide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the in thing now, actually.
Yeah. Climate change, right?
Yeah. I mean, the process, of course, has been happening since the start of everything. But, this is an invisible process that we cannot see. There are carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, but this is the beauty of science. I mean, we managed to describe these processes, right? Okay, so with increase in carbon dioxide, emissions, the amount of carbon in atmosphere is increasing and it actually leads to global warming, global sea surface temperature, global heated ocean. So the only way to fix carbon is by the process of photosynthesis.
Sure.
All right, so trees are able to do that. We can't. We don't need CO2 to live. But then comparing all types of forests, all types of green plants, mangrove has the ability to the most efficient to fix carbon, right? Given that their physiology to absorb more, and then the ability of the ecosystem to trap or to keep or to sequester this carbon. It's a combination of factors, actually, not just the plants. Actually, crabs do help in the process. You see, like, okay, plants absorb carbon dioxide and then they shed their leaves. So the crab will then grab the leaf to make their burrows, right? To patch on the walls of their burrows. So this actually helps the process, and it is being kept. All this carbon are being kept on in the ground, in the soil, for years and years and years and years. It accumulated, so that's why they are the most efficient. All right. So, but then talking about crab, this is also an indicator. Whenever the next time you visit mangrove, normally you won't see that many leaf litter because the detritus cycle actually allow crab to feed on these leaves, I mean fallen leaf, and then use them to make their burrows. So if you see a lot of leaf without crabs, that is an indicator of unhealthy mangrove. Okay. All right, so there you go about carbon sequestration. They have the ability, and it's proven scientifically to be 4 times better than in terrestrial forests. With the combination with seagrass ecosystem and salt marshes, we don't have that much salt marshes. So these three ecosystems are being categorized or grouped as blue carbon ecosystem. So sure. This is a lot of research is going on as we speak. So, and I have a couple of friends focusing, delving into carbon.
Okay.
And I'm assisting them most of the time, yep.
Because I think I was reading that, you know, mangrove loss is actually, some consider it worse for the climate than actually rainforest loss, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so there you go. This is the issue. Mangrove is the most efficient plant or habitat to absorb, to fix carbon dioxide. But then at the same time, okay, this is the risk of deforestation of mangroves. So we cut, tree, the ability to absorb, gone. But if we change the land use, we change mangrove, we will emit, they will emit a lot of carbon that has been stored for hundreds, thousands of years.
Oh,
so yeah, that is the risk. So that's why, I mean, like, when we deforest mangrove, because it's invisible, you don't see. Okay, you see it turn into a pond, you see it turn into a resort, but then you don't see the carbon being oxygenated and become carbon dioxide. So that is the risk, and this must be taken care of.
Okay. So it sounds like the leading cause of mangrove deforestation is humans.
Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah.
To put it mildly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is the main cause, I suppose, for tourism, for business.
All right, so this is my favorite topic, actually, disturbances in mangrove.
Sure.
Okay, in ecological studies, there are natural disturbances. There are agents that actually cause mangrove to be disturbed, any forest to be disturbed for that matter. But then there is a purpose of an ecosystem being disturbed. Like I mentioned earlier, a disturbance like lightning strikes or insect herbivory, for example, they actually attack or kill trees or a group of trees to allow for natural regeneration to happen.
Sure. Okay,
so that was my PhD, actually. So lightning strike disturbances. So this actually create a means for seedlings, for baby mangrove to grow, because most of the species are shade intolerant, because under the canopy they cannot grow further. But again, the parent sacrificed or died because of disturbances, allowing the baby to grow and replace their place. In a beautiful cycle, I would say, the parent died gracefully to allow for new generation to grow.
Mm.
Okay, but nature disturbances are good. But not the extreme ones, of course.
Yeah. Okay,
but then, human disturbances, we are always the culprit. Anthropogenic impacts. Eh? So
yes,
we do disrupt changes, rapid change to the mangrove, and they won't have the ability to
regenerate.
Yeah. Okay, so for example, like if we turn it into a pond, and then, okay, for example, like after 5 or 6 years of being a pond, and then it will be abandoned. In some cases, they are abandoned. Mangrove will have hard time. They have to strategize to regrow or to recolonize this area. So at that point, we may need to provide assisted regeneration for the mangrove. See, like, mangrove restoration does not mean we plant or replant. There are a lot of strategies. We need to consider the hydrology of the area and then suitable plants or suitable sediment for each species to plant. And then if you turn it into resort, surely turn into housing. I mean, they're just gone just like that, right?
Yeah.
So, with carbon being emitted because of land clearing and then putting people, putting buildings there, so there's no chance for them to recover. And we are actually contributing to the increase carbon dioxide and heat to the world,
And all the other effects of climate change, like, weather patterns and things like that.
Yeah, it's a chain reaction.
Chain reaction, yeah. So I guess, what's being done then to address our disappearing mangroves?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, we now realise. We realise, oh, okay. I mean, in fact, it would be a good study, like, to know the understanding of mangrove, importance of mangrove to general public. Now that we have, like, okay, small group of scientists, a group of administrators, managers that understand this situation, but we need to make it public. Like, thank you. This interview could be one of the ways. Like, general public needs to understand, like, the importance of mangrove. But then, of course, I've actually studied or listed all the policies, legal tools that we have that actually contribute to mangrove conservation. There are a lot, actually. And then, but then none of them, except for maybe National Forestry Act and National Forestry Policy, other than that, are not directly linked or directly helping mangrove. Although they, for example, National Fisheries Act actually focuses on fisheries industries, but we should consider mangrove as the favorite habitat for these fishes.
Sure.
So if we don't conserve or preserve mangrove as a habitat for fish, there's a missing link there. And then it is a favorite habitat for migratory birds. Yeah, so they've been traveling during winter in the Northern Hemisphere for generations and generations and generations. And our mangrove, our wetlands are R&R, if you like, in our terms, in our highway terms, it's R&R for them before moving or traveling to the down south. So legal tool is, I think, one of the best means. And then not just having policy and laws, we need to actually tighten the enforcement of these laws. Yeah? Because in Malaysia in particular, mangroves, land are state matters. So it's actually the power of the landowner. It is the state. Okay. So each state, if we can convince the Menteri Besar, the Chief Minister of the importance of mangrove, we may have a good support for the whole system or for the whole objective of mangrove conservation. Besides, at national level, there are a huge list also, I would say a PowerPoint slide of list of international agreement or multilateral environmental agreement that Malaysia participated in. Malaysia is very friendly. I always tell my students, my friends, that Malaysia is very friendly and we sign almost all multilateral environmental agreement. Sure. But then, we commit to the global community, so we must adhere to some of the key objectives of these initiatives. So, two legal sections that we need to actually fulfill. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So it is a commitment of the country. Yeah. But of course, like federal government, they can come up with policies. But if it's not supported by laws and maybe state laws, it won't be of any benefit to us. So now that's the role of the governments. But then the third force, I would call, the community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So community with the support of academic, with the support of NGOs, can make some difference, of course. But that may at localized stage. So, I'm impressed, actually, like local communities. We have like local communities in Langkawi, for example, in Kuala Gula, in Matang, and all over the country. Actually, we have small group that are aware of the situation because they live there.
Sure.
They live in the situation. Although before, most of these communities, many of them, too complacent, maybe because it has been there surrounding them all this while, so they don't really realize. But then now that with all these impacts, with global awareness, national level awareness of the importance of mangroves, they start to protect these resources. So maybe the government or the authorities may consider community-based resource management, which is not that huge in Malaysia at the moment. Maybe the government can actually collaborate with communities, with the support of academic, with the support of experts. We can work this out, like local management of resources at local level, because I know the lack of not enough human resource in the authority, in the authorities or enforcement agencies. So the local committee could be the agent of change, they can assist in this.
Because they benefit directly from the maintenance of mangroves, don't they? I mean, because some of their livelihoods depend on it.
True.
As well, right?
True. Yeah.
So I guess that community.
Yeah, because many of the community living in the coastal zone are fishermen.
Yep.
So they fish for living, to sell, consume on them. So if they lose mangrove, they will lose the fish. This is another chain reaction. So they realize this. And then, for example, like, especially in Langkawi, because this is our favorite spot as Lestari. We have a research station in Langkawi, and it has been our favorite study site, I think, since 1970s. My professors, my bosses. So Kilim mangrove, for example, the community used to be fishermen, but now with the change of the status of Langkawi, they became like the favorite tourism spot in Malaysia, and they receive millions of tourists every year. So now they move to being a tourism industry player.
Yep.
But then now we realize since Langkawi turned to become a duty-free island, and then it is now a UNESCO Global Geopark. They receive more visitors for that. But then the activities, the tourism activities that come along with this status, actually have some bad contribution to the environment. So, for example, like boat operation, especially like the speed, the volume, the number of boat can actually contribute to the degradation of mangrove. You see, like because we have so many visitors and we don't set limit of the number of visitors, so boat operators tend to entertain the demand for mangrove tour, and yeah, so especially when they speed, boat will create wave. Yeah. Although it looks minimal for one boat, but imagine 1,000 boats
the
a day.
Impact, yeah.
So slowly, it is heavy scouring of sediment at the bank will erode and then will cause the tree to fall. So, and then the reaction to that would be channels being widened, and then being shallow. I mean, they become shallow. So it actually changed the hydrology and the integrity of the environment. Tourism also actually contribute to construction of facilities.
Sure,
I mean, buildings, and it also will lead to leachate from landfills, for example, sewage treatment, and then
trash.
Yeah. So a combination of factors will contribute and derive from advancement or development of tourism. So that is one very clear point of the impact of tourism to mangroves. There are other industrialization, urbanization, aquaculture, agriculture. So they have influence in their own ways to the mangrove. So we have to cater. We have to understand the whole situation. We need to understand how mangrove react, how mangrove actually run their daily activities.
They try to live.
Yeah, they want to live. They adapt, okay. But then, of course, they have plan. Yeah. And then, like the animals, at least they can find way to run away. Human. Actually, this is one point I always tell my friend. Like, you see, like managing human is so complex. It's so complicated. And that's why I ended up studying mangrove too. But then now, I realize as I delve into mangrove, it gets unique and more unique and more unique. They are actually complicated too. So, but then in a nice way, like I have more things to explore about mangrove, and this is intriguing. And yeah, I think I have the whole life, and because I have all the support to study and learn mangrove more, so I will do this my whole life, perhaps.
Well, I mean, we need people like you because we are losing our mangroves, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's more difficult to replant them than to, you know, just let them generate on their own, isn't
it?
Yeah,
in medical terms, I mean, we always hear like prevention is better than cure.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same situation, actually. Like, okay. Talking about regeneration or assisted regeneration, lately, like we know, everyone is excited. Like, oh, I want to contribute to mangrove conservation, environmental conservation, nature conservation. But we have to do it with some knowledge, with some understandings. The reason why we replant or we restore or rehabilitate areas. Okay, so I mean, this is an advice also to big corporations like for their CSR activities. I realize now that many bodies or companies, or for their corporate social responsibility, they will spend a lot of money to do this. Okay, so normally they will spend like some money to buy seedlings and get people together to replant mangrove without really understanding, is this the right place to plant, or are these seedlings suitable in this place? So they have happy times replanting, taking pictures, go on news. And the next day, no one really monitored this seedling, and they could
just die.
Yeah,
right?
Just die. So this is where we need to collaborate, actually. Researchers and then foresters, maybe. We do it in a proper way. Like I mentioned earlier, sometimes rehabilitation of mangrove doesn't need you to replant. You just change the hydrology, channel out waters from the ponds, and then or maybe building doing soft engineering, like changing the drainage system or because they are naturally meander the rivers, and you straighten it, it spoil the whole system. So yeah, we have to strategize actually. So don't waste your money simply planting. Why not speak with us, discuss with us, and look at every locality that needs to be restored or rehabilitated. Okay, that's another point actually. I mean, not we cannot plant a mangrove anywhere. We have to be selective. So I always would suggest or support assisted regeneration in degraded or disturbed area, right? Because the likeliness of them to survive is higher, and the efficiency of our activity would be better. But then, as opposed to planting them elsewhere, yeah, with especially non-mangrove area. You see, some of us would tend to plant them in mud flats or on sea grasses too. Mm. So these are adjacent habitats that has their own characteristics. Mm. So, and then, I forgot about to mention. So, okay. So, of course, we have to plan. We have to strategize. So another important role I forgot to mention earlier of mangrove is the connectivity with their adjacent habitats. This is another medium to long-term aim of myself, is to really describe the connectivity, the complexity of mangrove and their adjacent habitats. This could be a suggestion or an input for managers especially. All this while, we see mangrove as one unit, seagrass as one unit, coral reef as one unit. I would suggest they have like connection in between them.
Surely.
Yeah. So I came up with this hypothesis of a diagram on how these habitats are connected, the agent of the connectivity, and then the processes, geological processes, physical, biological processes happening. So I would love to see all of these coastal resources or tidal wetland complex, I call it, as one. Mm. So you manage them as one entity, as a whole. They are all connected. Okay. Easy example would be development upland, yeah? I mean, upstream, would definitely have impacts on mangrove downstream.
For sure.
All right. So that must be considered as well. And then how they are connected, all these erosion processes, how they are connected to formation of islands, bays, lagoons. Yeah, this must be described, and everyone must see this as an item. This is within one river system. How about interstate, intercountry, intercontinental? Possibly. But then, I was with a group of ASEAN volunteers recently. There are issues, inter-country issues, like Mekong Delta, for example, Mekong River. It actually passes by 5 states. So, yeah, you can see conflicts in management. So, there are ways. That's why there are bilateral agreement, yeah, multilateral agreement on management of resources. But whatever it is, for example, Mekong, the impact, the mangroves, will be felt by our friends in Vietnam. So, whatever we do in China, whatever we do in Laos, and upstream, so we'll have impact on mangroves in Vietnam. So this must be considered in our management and conservation.
The chain reactions, right?
Chain reaction.
Okay. And I guess the bottom line is, whatever's still left, let's not touch them.
Yep.
For development, for anything.
Yeah, we would like to advise that. Another project that I'm running is to really identify the forest reserves, the mangrove forest reserve in Malaysia, mangrove state land, where it may not be reserved, but it is under the power of the state, mm-hmm. so they can do anything with that. Another one is privately owned land, mangrove that is titled to private person or authorities. So these three different component or status of mangrove must be accounted for. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll try to convince the landowners to, yeah, why not conserve? Of course, land acquisition to conserve doesn't happen a lot, but we'll fight for that.
So you're a very busy man, Dr. Aldry. You've got a lot to do.
Off late, but it's a fun busy, right?
Yeah.
I love doing this, so I don't mind.
I guess because, you know, mangroves aren't quite the most charismatic, you know, they're not like polar bears, for example, you know, but the importance and
true.
The benefits to the ecosystem.
There you go. This will be a minor project that I challenge some of my students. Like you see, as a layperson going into mangrove, This may be the same case as I was in school, for example. I go to mangrove, I may look at them as very, very unique with their features, the roots, the soil. But then how do you gain information about this? This is what I'm working on a minor scale, on information, delivering information about mangrove. So it is modern now, like there's Internet of Things, right? So you can actually provide information online. You can do it creatively on site. Speaking of Internet of Things, yeah, restoration may use Internet of Things, this technology to help in assisting in regeneration. For example, we can do precision planting, like using drone, using sensors. We can actually detect which area needs to be replanted.
Yeah.
And you see, there are already technologies to actually detect the condition of the soil. So if we know the type, if we know the salinity condition, if we know the chemistry condition of this soil and sediment, we can select suitable species for planting. It can be done. Yeah, we just need a lot of people, and this is why I collaborate by initiating the formation of my mangrove. Yeah, that was the first question I didn't answer, right?
I mean, for people listening, you know, can they get involved as well?
Yeah, sure. That's the point. All right. After I came back from my PhD to Malaysia, I figured there are a few scientists in Malaysia working on mangrove on every aspect, on ecology, on fish, on legal, on so many issues of mangrove. But most of them in a small group, and they work alone. So the tendency of being redundant was high. So I initiated on the second International Day for the Conservation of Mangrove Ecosystem. That was last year. I initiated a workshop, and I get about 50 mangrove researchers to discuss on the formation of the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network. So this is to create a means for us to interact, to communicate on research initially. But then I realized there are quite a huge number of fans. Mangrove have a huge fans out there, actually.
That's good.
So in the form of artists, in the form of photographers. So yeah, we actually try to gauge everyone to be with us. Right, so we can share information. It actually can provide ideas for research too. So we, at the moment, currently, I'm building up a database of mangrove researchers in Malaysia for my mangrove. At the same time, also, I'm creating a database of mangrove fans, the enthusiasts. And then, at the moment, currently, we communicate through our Facebook group. So search for the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network Facebook group.
Okay.
And we have a page too, but it's not that active as the group. So yeah, why not join us? And then we collaborate and start there. You can post any question, any request, any help on mangrove conservation, mangrove management, mangrove research too.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but thank you so much, Dr. Audrey. That's been so informative. And I guess, bottom line, all of us can do something, right?
So definitely. Yeah.
So
near the coast, away from the coast, you are related to mangrove somehow.
Okay. All right. I've been speaking to Dr. Ahmad Aldri Amir. He's a senior lecturer and a research fellow at the Institute for Environment and Development, or Lestari, at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. He's also the coordinator of the Malaysian Mangrove Research Alliance and Network, which is also known as My Mangrove. And if you'd like to find out more, just search for that name, which I just said, on Facebook. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.